Food prices have increased over 40%. Energy prices have increased over 20%. Wheat and gas prices have increased over 70%. What's going to be next? Do you see these trends reversing or even stabilizing? All fiat currencies have always failed and collapsed their economies on their way down. The Roman Empire, China, France, Argentina, Finland, Mexico, Russia, and Zimbabwe all tried fiat currency and all collapsed into chaos. Meanwhile, the dollar has lost over 97% of its gold value since 1971, when an ounce of gold was valued at $35. If your assets are in paper, you are in danger. Protect your assets with gold and silver. Visit Discount Gold and Silver Trading at DGScoins.com. That's DGScoins.com or call 1-800-375-4188. That's 800-375-4188. Protect yourself and your family.
Ladies and gentlemen, I'm Melody Cederstrom, and you're listening to Financial Survival. I'm here with my co-host, Alfred Adisk, to bring you our opinion and commentary on today's economic and political events for Friday, August 28th, 2015. Good afternoon, Al.
Hi, Melody.
Oh, what 2 months we've had. It's been, you'd think it was 2009 once again, so very hectic days in the markets and with Discount Gold and Silver, and people or whatever happened from 2 months ago, they decided to start getting off the fence and get busy and start positioning themselves in the manner in which they should. We had a nice day in gold today, up 890 at 1135. We have silver up 7 cents today at 1469. Platinum was up 20 bucks, 2% at 102.4. Palladium was up about 4.5%, up 25 at $593. The USDX today, of course, was stronger, 96.10 at 0.34 up, points up. Crude oil, you know, it's just really amazing. What, crude oil is up, what, 16% in 2 days? Like, okay, yeah, these markets aren't rigged. 45.36 up 2.80 for oil today. And the paper markets today, not a lot of action, a little, you know, downside action on the day. The Dow was down 13 points. 16,641. The NASDAQ was up at 48.23. The S&P up basically unchanged at 1988. 10-year yields, that's moving up a little bit, 2.19. Euro 1.12, down 0.51. A mixed bag in the European and Asian markets. Japan was up 3, Hong Kong down 1, London up about 1%, and Germany just basically unchanged for the day. So mixed bag there, and I think everybody is kind of relieved
for the drama week. The drama seems to be over at least for a day or two. We'll see what happens come Monday, whether things are going way up, way down, or just going to move sideways again. But for the moment, the drama has disappeared.
I came across, it was a lengthy article, I only, you know, brought just a little bit for the program. And the article talked about the psychology behind the financial market swings. And did you know that Wall Street has a top psychiatrist? And so, like, when the markets are doing all these crazy things, you have big banks and investment firms, they turn to a psychiatrist. His name is Richard Peterson. He's a CEO of MarketPsych, a firm that applies research from behavioral science to financial markets. The computer programs that they have try to gauge the market's mood by scanning news and Twitter and other social media. Then they sell the data that they gather. They sell it to traders, and they sift through more than 3 million articles each day, this data feed, registering, they'd look for the confusion, optimism, fear. And last month, he warned his investor clients that they were in for a rough ride and probably a real correction later in the summer. He said fear is creeping in. So, you know, if you talk about, you know, a little bit of inside trading and gauging the market sentiment and the, you know, we talk about the fear index and so forth with a lot of, you know, some think it's just a lot of hocus pocus. And here's a guy that gets paid a lot of big bucks to determine. And these type of programs just aren't used for market trading. They're used in governments. They're used for, you have retail governments. They want to know how you're feeling today. They want to know what your reaction is going to be to a particular situation. So when we talk about how we're being monitored on a daily basis, they just don't want to know what you're eating and breathing. They're going to use it for all kinds of things, you know, for their purposes. And it allows them to get away with what they can if they know.
I read an article back, I don't know, several months ago, and it explained, it made a very important point. It said, look, you've got these free services. Yahoo, for example, doesn't cost anything for email there. Seems like a heck of a deal. But, you know, they have people working for them. They have to pay them. So where do they make their money? They're not charging you a subscription. It is a free service. And everybody says, yay, I want a free service. Okay, it's free, but where do they make their money? And there's two answers to that. One is with advertising, but most of our browsers have software that suppresses the ads where you don't have to see most of them. So the advertising doesn't really work very well. So what's left? They have to sell the data. They give you a free service, but the way they pay the help is they've got to sell the data. What websites are you visiting and so on and so forth? What websites and browsers and blah, blah, blah. They collect that information. That information has financial value, and they're selling it. Right? So it's part of the explanation for what's happening here. And the implication is, if you don't want to be spied on, you got to actually begin to think about using services that cost you money. If you pay them, maybe they won't collect the data. Maybe they won't sell the data. Maybe they will guarantee not to. Now, there may be other things like StartPage, for example, that are allegedly, they will maintain your privacy. But there's a good point here. There is no free lunch. That's the implication. And it's something we need. We really need to learn it throughout life. Government's got a bunch of free lunches for us, too. But just like the Internet, one way or another, those free lunches are being paid for. And if you want to sign up for one, you or somebody you know is going to pay for that lunch. Government's not paying for it. They figured a way to get the free lunch, and so have the people running the browsers and the free websites and whatever else. So, yada yada.
Just think about the millions of dollars or billions of dollars these traders made by having this information, knowing that fear is creeping in, taking advantage, shorting the markets, and then you have a market that is a little skittish and maybe does have some downward pressure. And then it is just, you know, so folks, you don't have a chance. People don't have a chance. I mean, that's where all these polls and politicians I used to work for a marketing group. We used to do a research group where, you know, we'd bring people in and we'd test products, and the best design on the product is the one that the company would use. And it's You know, I feel you can't get away from that stuff.
It's part of business. You can't get away from it. It's part of sales and efficiency and a bunch of things like that.
But it's gotten out of control.
It's gotten out of control in part because we've managed to centralize so many things. Microsoft, right? I would guess that 60% of the computers in the world are running Microsoft programs. I don't know if that's true or false, but that's a guess. A majority of them, it would be my belief on it. Now, that's centralization. If I had to just deal with a local service provider, and he was kind of spying on me, I could go rap on his door, essentially, and tell him what to do. But we're dealing with something that doesn't even have to pay any attention to me. They're located 1,500 or 1,000 miles away, in maybe even in a foreign country. It's because the competition has winnowed out the weak players. There's only one or two, a handful of really strong players left. Everybody's fighting for survival. Grab any advantage you can. Those that succeed get fabulously wealthy, but they become impersonal. They are so powerful and so remote that you and I are nobody, right? It's like going down to the grocery store to get some food and complaining that the steak you bought was rotten. There's nobody to hear your complaint. They don't care. So what?
Go buy another one.
You know, it does. You're nobody. It's part of the problem. They have grown so enormously impersonal. Microsoft, I mean, we talked about it earlier. I've got a problem with Microsoft today and the computer crash and blah, blah, blah. I have despised Microsoft, it seems like, since I was a 16-year-old kid in high school. And, of course, Microsoft didn't even exist back then. But it seems like a lifelong, I have to use it, I do use it.
It's the control.
An arrogance behind it, where they just say, essentially, I feel like I'm getting the finger every time. Microsoft Word, wonderful program, right? But Microsoft, there is an arrogance behind them.
Well,
and it's difficult to know what to do about that.
Well, today or this week, Facebook, we're talking about Microsoft, Facebook, they hit a milestone. 1 billion people logged in on a single day. That is 1/7 of the world population. And I believe that was on Monday. And the number amounts to 1/7 of the Earth's population. Monday's milestone was sort of symbolic for Facebook. They have nearly 1.5 billion users who log in at least once a month. And the guy who founded the Facebook, I mean, these guys are scary too. They have an arrogance, but they're also scary because they have so much power and control over you. And for those who allow that to happen to themselves, and many do. He says, I'm so proud of our community. He says, our community stands for giving every person a voice, for promoting understanding, and for including everyone in the opportunities of our modern world. Then he goes on and he rattles on 1 billion users, overall users in 2010. But then he goes on and he talks about social network has become an essential service in many of our lives. A sort of online connective tissue that's live and breathing that binds us to friends, family, and strangers.
And computer monitors.
I mean, it's like, I'm sorry, but what I found interesting about this, most of the people that were logged in on Monday were outside the U.S. and Canada. More than 83% come from other countries. And it isn't China, because China blocks Facebook. So most of these members come from India, South Africa, and Africa. So that surprised me.
Well, it's interesting information. It kind of it might imply that people in the United States, for example, are becoming disenchanted by Facebook. Because Facebook, again, one of these essentially free services, if they can get 1 billion people to respond at the same time, they have a fabulous. I mean, we have pollsters that conduct polls. We've got, I can't think of a name of a pollster right now, but they go out and they survey 1,000, 1,500, 2,000 people for their opinion on who, what, Donald Trump, for example. and they sell those polls, right? They make money off of this. Facebook, by means of computers and a billion people signing up on the same day, they have a fabulous, extraordinary database. It's not just 1,000 or 2,000 people in a poll. It's a billion. No, it's a billion around the world. It's probably
1.5.
You find out what's going on, and you find out what's going on in India. Another section of the poll is going on in the United States. I'm not sure that we have a global situation here on a regular basis, but we might. But they have a fabulous. They're taking a poll every day, and I'm sure by following it, they have learned that if people are turning, they have learned that if people click on Miley Cyrus, it's evidence that they have confidence in the economy, and they're not worried about anything. On the other hand, if people are talking on Facebook about some article that came out of the New York Times, if that goes up, it probably signifies that they are more concerned about the economy or the political system or whatever. They can infer. You can click things even when you don't intend to. You're just just surfing the net. That's all. They can tell from where you surf what your mindset is on a particular day. I have no doubt that they can do it. And then from their perspective, we're just a bunch of lab rats. And they're selling the information on the lab rats to corporations that'll pay for it so they can sell us, find out what kind of cheese we prefer in our traps. Say, I'm tired of going after that cheddar cheese and those mouse traps. I would like a different, how about some Swiss cheese for change?
And that's where I was going when they had the psychiatrist monitoring the market swings and everything else. That's what we are. We're lab rats.
Yeah, I know. And that's what's offensive about.
Yep, yes.
That's what I was talking about. Same thing when they, you have lost your dignity. They're not dealing with people.
It's just how much money.
And they'll give you an illusion that we're here to help you. They don't care if you have two legs or 10. It makes no difference to them. How much do you buy? What do you spend? What's your attitude? What are you likely to, how much marketable information can we acquire? And it's annoying. It's offensive. It's disturbing. If I've got to deal with that guy down the street, if he's the guy, if we don't have a monopoly, a near monopoly, which is what we have, Microsoft is only one example. There are a number of others, Amazon and Facebook and the rest of that sort of thing.
Apple.
Near monopolies. All right. If you didn't have these enormous organizations, you can get to the people that are in charge and you can impress them that maybe they're doing something that you don't like and other people don't like, and maybe they have to respond to you. They have to at least say, well, some guy called up on the phone. Right now, you can't even reach these people. You can't even reach them. You can send email and the rest of that. Who pays attention to it? Does anybody really respond? They give you computer replies. I know sometimes you can get, customer support and customer service, but it is disturbing to just be relegated where things you have to deal with, you can't easily get away from it, and yet it annoys. It's like, why? I wish to God somebody would invent a good alternative operating system to Microsoft Windows. And they have Linuxes out there. I don't like the interface necessarily. It's not as good as Windows, my opinion. But just the same, if somebody would come up with a really competitive operating system, people would run to it just to get away from Microsoft. And it would be a good thing, in my opinion, just to start to break down these enormous organizations and get them down to a size where they become on a scale that people can deal with. Not something so massive that, you're unseen. You're watched all the time, but you're not recognized. You're not valued individually. You're just a data collection point, that's all. Let's take a break for some commercial announcements. We'll be back to talk more about what's happening in the world on financial survival in just a moment. Melody and I will be right back. Please stay tuned.
Job stress, financial obligations, or relationship problems have you feeling stressed out? When life is too much to handle, use Apothecary Herbs' emotional stress formula. Feel calm and more in control with herbs especially combined to provide the organic nutrition your system needs to help you cope. Complete instructions for maximum benefit and a money-back guarantee. You've waited long enough. Call Apothecary Herbs now. Toll free, 866-229-3663. That's 866-229-3663. International callers dial 704-875-8010 or order online at thepowerherbs.com.
Food prices have increased over 40%. Energy prices have increased over 20%. Wheat and gas prices have increased over 70%. What's going to be next? Do you see these trends reversing or even stabilizing? All fiat currencies have always failed and collapsed their economies on their way down. The Roman Empire, China, France, Argentina, Finland, Mexico, Russia, and Zimbabwe all tried fiat currency and all collapsed into chaos. Meanwhile, the dollar has lost over 97% of its gold value since 1971, when an ounce of gold was valued at $35. If your assets are in paper, you are in danger. Protect your assets with gold and silver. Visit Discount Gold and Silver Trading at DGScoins.com. That's DGScoins.com or call 1-800-375-4188. That's 800-375-4188. Protect yourself and your family.
American Voice Radio Network is heard on Galaxy 19 at 97 degrees west, transponder 23, frequency 12115, audio PID 2595. AVR is heard on the left side audio channel, and AVR 2 is heard on the right side audio channel. Remember, both AVR and AVR 2 are on Galaxy 19. Same network, double the choices.
Hi, folks. I'm Alfred Adusk here with Melody Cedarstrom on Financial Survival, brought to you by Discount Gold and Silver. What's next, Melody? Are we going to talk about potatoes?
No, we'll save that for, we were just talking during the break about how they, created a new potato that has been approved by the FDA, by the U.S. Department of Agriculture, and, they just mentioned that, it's going to resist a pathogen that caused the Irish potato famine. And, of course, it's a second generation of genetically modified, engineered potato. Like, why can't they just leave the potatoes alone?
Well, because there's money to be made in creating a potato or other products that don't spoil.
I get that. But
but here's the problem with that. They produce these crops and products that are increasingly resistant to spoilage, and as a result, they can ship them further. They can they don't have to move them all today because they're going to be spoiled by tomorrow. They have a lot of economic advantages, but what is food spoilage? It is digestion by microorganisms. When a food rots, it is being digested by microorganisms that are in the air, on the fruit, whatever, on the potato. When you create a potato that doesn't rot, that has a longer preservative, you add preservatives to whatever it is you're serving, the preservatives prevent it from being digested, right? At least digested in the same sense that an ordinary potato, you can digest it. You increase this shelf life, you minimize the spoilage rate, you have also minimized its digestibility. Now what are we doing? We're eating potatoes that we can't fully digest. We're eating vegetables and whatever. Strawberries, they'll last longer thanks to GMO. Sounds like a great idea. Fine. have it, taste it, you know, consume it, but you won't be able to digest it. This is insanity to some degree. There's economic value to this sort of thing, but there's also, what are we going to do with foods we can't digest? It won't rot. I've told this story before. This goes back into the 1990s. I bought a bundle of little cherry tomatoes, and they looked, they were just brilliantly red. They looked like little, they looked artificial. They looked like they were made by, like Christmas ornaments. Shiny, bright red. And everyone looked exactly alike. And I bought a little bunch of clump of them, a vine, cherry tomatoes. It was like a clump of grapes, practically. Bought it home, set it on a shelf in the kitchen, and while I was unpacking the groceries and forgot that I put it on the shelf, meant to put it in the refrigerator, forgot, and I put it on, left it on the shelf and closed the cabinet door. And I didn't see it again for several weeks. And I looked in there, and I thought, oh, my gosh, they've got to be all rotted. No, they weren't. They were still pristine. They'd been sitting on the shelf, tomatoes, for something like 3 weeks. I thought, my God, what have I found here? Well, then I started watching it. And it was a couple of months before it actually started to show signs of deterioration. I don't even know what they were selling. They looked like tomatoes. I think they called them tomatillos or something I can't recall clearly. But it was just evidence. They were selling things that look beautiful, but you can't digest. It's nuts. The world is mad. It's all about the money. And what you get, if you get a digestible food or anything else that's real, that's maybe you'll be lucky enough to do that. But if you're not, too bad for you. What's next, Melody?
Oh, I think that's about, we can talk about the markets. I think next week is going to be an active week in the markets. I would think with Labor Day approaching, we might see a higher market by the end of the week. But on Tuesday, you have the Institute for Supply Management. They're going to release its manufacturing index. We have construction spending that's going to be released also. Automakers are releasing their vehicle sales. You have the Labor Department on Wednesday about productivity. You've got factory orders coming out. You've got a lot of reports coming out prior to a 3-day holiday weekend. We've got the weekless job claims coming out on Thursday. Friday, we have the employment data for August. So it should be an active week in the markets, Al. I get the numbers, I get these reports, I get the rigging and so forth, but there should be.
Part of the reason it should be interesting is because for the 2 days when the market went up dramatically this week, mm-hmm. on both of those days, if you looked at the chart for the day's pricing, the chart jumped something like 400 points in the first few minutes after they opened the market. And I am inclined to believe, I mean, they went vertical. The chart just went vertical for the first, on the second day, went up 400 points in 5 minutes. I am disinclined to believe that was the result of people in the market, ordinary investors, just saying, I want to bid up. I think prices are going up. I'm willing to pay more. I think it was evidence of the government manipulating the market. And that happened. The vertical lines were apparent in the two big days. Today, there's no vertical line at the beginning of the market day. In fact, there was a fall, which there was a subsequent recovery, but there was a fall in the markets. And later on, it recovered and got back to where it's now just relatively few points down, 10, 12 points down for the day for the Dow Jones. But the point from my perspective is that if those vertical increases, those fast, nearly instantaneous increases when the markets first opened on the big days, if those increases were the result of the work of the Federal Reserve, then today we didn't get that result. The Fed wasn't in the market today. They didn't feel obligated to push it up any more than they already had. And the question is, can these markets sustain themselves at rates of 16,600 points? Can it be sustained without federal subsidies. Or, as soon as we pull out of those markets, as soon as the Fed pulls out of the markets, say we can't spend any more, well, the markets tend to fall. And that's the big question. And we're going to look, I'm going to be watching to see what happens on Monday. Will the Fed come back in? Will we see a vertical line on the chart that shows the price go up several hundred points in the first couple of minutes after they open the market on Monday? Or will they just sit back and say, well, let's see what happens? And for me, that'll be a point to watch. The question is, you know, we're seeing evidence of this in China, where China's had their problems with their market going down dramatically in the last several months. Everyone's aware of that. They have tried to support the markets by buying stocks. All right. This is essentially a form of quantitative easing that's being attempted by the Chinese government to support the markets in China. But quantitative easing hasn't worked in Japan to stimulate markets and generate inflation, and that was its original point. Well, not stimulate markets, stimulate the economy, and by generating inflation, hasn't really worked in Japan, hasn't really worked in Switzerland, hasn't really worked in the United States, and here's China trying it. Now, we're going to watch and see, but we've got an article here from, let's see, here's one, something from Bloomberg. China's stock market rout to resume as intervention ends, says Bank of America. The rebound in China's stock will be short-lived because state intervention is too costly to continue and valuations aren't justified given the slowing economy, says Bank of America Corporation. Now, they're talking about state intervention in the markets. They are buying stocks, buying bonds in order to sustain their price, in order to provide liquidity and the illusion of some sort of stability in the markets. But Bank of America says China can't afford to play this game for long. And they are going on and they say as soon as people sense the government is withdrawing from direct intervention, that is to say China's variety of quantitative easing, there will be lots of investors starting to dump stocks again. People buying stocks because they believe ultimately that the Federal Reserve and or in China they're buying stocks because the Chinese government is trying to support the market. Here in the United States, we are buying stocks because we believe the government will continue to support the market and or the Federal Reserve. But what this guy says at Bank of America, he says, no, as soon as people sense government is withdrawing direct intervention, that is to say government subsidy, government support, quantitative easing, there will be lots of investors starting to dump stocks again. When they start to dump stocks, the market is going to drop. Is it going to drop back down to 14,000? I don't know. Is it going to drop down to 13,000? I don't know. I don't know where it's going. But the argument is that it's at least unknown and unlikely that the markets can sustain themselves at current levels without government subsidy and support. So, the implication is China's quantitative easing program won't work for long, can't succeed long term. If China's quantitative easing program fails, as did Japan, Switzerland, and that of the United States, who will believe that quantitative easing works anywhere? Anywhere. If quantitative easing is discredited as a strategy for causing inflation and stimulating the economy, what's left for central banks to use to stimulate their national economies? Near zero interest rates in Morgan. Right? Quantitative easing hasn't worked in Japan, Switzerland, United States, and now China. What's left? What tools do they have left? If the central banks have no more tools to stop deflation and economic depression, we seem certainly destined for an economic depression. If there's nothing they can do, we're going to go into that. It seems like the forces of the economy, the fundamental forces, the, I don't know, almost subconscious forces, are pushing us towards deflation, towards depression. government's trying to fight it as best they can, but the evidence indicates that government and or central banks, they don't have the tools. They can't. They can buy a little time. They can kick the can further down the road, a little bit further, a little bit further, a little bit further. But they can't really sustain the markets without injecting a lot of money into it. And even when they do, inevitably the markets, you know, they go up, but they'll start dropping again. The growing value of currency becomes the enemy of the economy. If central banks can't stop the deflation and impose inflation, I wonder if we have a remaining choice other than to destroy the currency that's subject to deflation and replace it with something else that is not subject to deflation and is more easily inflated. I don't know if that's even a viable option. But the point is that it appears that quantitative easing doesn't work. It appears that zero interest rate or near zero interest rates are ineffective at stimulating the economy. What else do the central banks have? And if they don't have anything else, what's going to stop something like a global depression from taking place? And it's not clear to me that there is anything else. Here's another article from Fiscal Times. And the headline is, Buyers Beware Why the Market's Rebound Won't Last. And it essentially says the same thing. The previous article focused on China. This one focuses on the United States. It says, U.S. stocks powered a second straight day of strong gains, lifting the Dow Jones Industrial Average out of the red for a week. But the evidence suggests that despite hopes of a V-shaped face-ripping rally, this is a prototypical dead cat bounce and should be treated with skepticism. In the 48 hours following the Fed's Tuesday late session meltdown, the Fed moved in to calm nerves and elevate stock prices. That's where we saw that vertical jump, in my opinion, on Wednesday and Thursday, proving once again that the equity prices are a key concern for policymakers. The implication is the stunning market increases seen earlier this week weren't natural. They were artificial. They were caused by the Federal Reserve's injection of cash into the markets and into the stock markets. The market indices increased. These increases aren't real. They are artificial and therefore can't be expected to last. As with the previous article we had about quantitative easing being unsustainable in China, quantitative easing is probably also unsustainable here in the U.S. As with the previous article's prediction that China's stock market rout will continue after government intervention ends, the most recent U.S. stock market rout will probably also resume just as soon as it's clear that the Federal Reserve has stopped injecting cash into the markets. So the big question becomes, how much more money can the Federal Reserve afford to pump into the markets? The Fed is already $4.5 trillion in debt, primarily due to quantitative easing episodes 1, 2, and 3. How much deeper into debt can the Federal Reserve go before it is destroyed by its own debt? How much debt can anyone assume, even the Federal Reserve? You know, people say they can just spend that money out of thin air. They can't just spend it out of thin air. They have to loan it into – they can print all the dollars they want. They can print a billion, a trillion, a hundred quadrillion. They can print all the paper dollars they want, but they loan them into circulation. Who will take that loan? They don't just inject them into circulation. They have to find somebody who's willing to borrow them, and then they get spent into the economy. But somebody's got to borrow that money from the Fed. I don't know if they have enough borrowers to do this anymore and really raise the amount of money in the money supply and push inflation, whatever. Point behind all of this is that we are – This little drama is today. There's not much drama in the markets, but it's just a pause, a respite, and we're going to see how much drama we get next week and the week after that, because this is not over. Let's take a break for some commercials. I'm Alfred Addisk, here with Melody Cederstrom on Financial Survival. We'll be back in a moment. Please stay tuned.
A heart condition and emergency rooms and medical doctors are not an option, you need our emergency heart attack kit. 5 concentrated liquid formulas enter the system in 60 seconds to protect your heart muscle, strengthen heartbeat, increase circulation, relieve pain, and make breathing easier. When seconds count, you want all the help you can get with our emergency heart attack kit. Easy to use and portable in a 1-pound compact kit for your purse, briefcase, or car. Call Apothecary Herbs now for your emergency heart attack kit toll-free, 866-229-3663. That's 866-229-3663. International callers dial 704-875-8010 or order online at www.thepowerherbs.com.
Food prices have increased over 40%. Energy prices have increased over 20%. Wheat and gas prices have increased over 70%. What's going to be next? Do you see these trends reversing or even stabilizing? All fiat currencies have always failed and collapsed their economies on their way down. The Roman Empire, China, France, Argentina, Finland, Mexico, Russia, Zimbabwe all tried fiat currency and all collapsed into chaos. Meanwhile, the dollar has lost over 97% of its gold value since 1971, when an ounce of gold was valued at $35. If your assets are in paper, you are in danger. Protect your assets with gold and silver. Visit Discount Gold and Silver Trading at DGScoins.com. That's DGScoins.com or call 1-800-375-4188. That's 800-375-4188. Protect yourself and your family.
Hi, folks. I'm Alfred Addisk. You're on Financial Survival with Melody Cederstrom. The program is brought to you by Discount Gold and Silver. And what's next, Melody?
Well, I think we should continue with a little bit of China because I don't think this quote unquote rebound is going to last.
No. And China's not rebounding. We're the ones that are rebounding, but China isn't even going to succeed.
That's my point. But, you know, the reason we went down was, you know, all the silly reasons that he gave us. But, no, our rebound is not going to last.
Well, you know, this article, again, buyer beware why the market's rebound won't last. This is speaking about the U.S. market. That's what they're focused on.
Right.
But they've got a section in that article, and it says, the fundamentals make it difficult to summarily dismiss a September interest rate hike. And thus, the big negative catalyst that has pushed the Dow down nearly 1,800 points from its May high remains in play. The specter of the first increase in interest rates since 2006. What? What are they talking about? Weren't we told just a few days ago that China was supposedly responsible for the 1,800-point fall in U.S. markets? Now we're being led to believe that the 1,800-point fall was caused by the mere threat of a 0.25% rise in interest rates. 0.25%? It's a triviality. It may be that it has some psychological impact, but its reality is nothing. If I raise your interest rates by 0.25%, you aren't going to bear, most people won't even notice it. It isn't going to be. They might look at their bill for the month of month, their mortgage, and say, oh, my gosh, they're paying an extra $10 this month. Where'd that come from? or their car payment. Most of them won't even notice a quarter of a percent, and they're blaming, and now this article from Bloomberg is trying to blame the threat of an increase of a quarter of a percent interest rates on the recent decline, dramatic decline in the stock markets. I think it's all a bunch of bunk. I think the cause for our current economic problems are not China, and they are not the threat of a one quarter of a percent rise in the interest rates. The cause for our, the cause or causes for our current economic malaise is that there are unresolved and even unadmitted systemic problems in the U.S. economy. These problems include a fiat currency. Right? We are trading with a dollar that is not worth the paper it's printed on, or not worth much more than the paper it's printed on. We also have a debt-based monetary system where we treat debt as if it were an asset. That's crazy. That's irrational. You understand it? Yet that's the way our system functions. Instead of having an asset-based monetary system, which is what we had clearly until 1933 and partially until 1968 and even on 1971, we have a debt-based monetary system. And everybody sits around, well, isn't that smart? Right? This is so slick. We're going to have a debt-based monetary system. It's crazy. It's crazy. It's insane. It's a huge lie. We've got nearly three decades of government attempts to manipulate and control the economy. You can trace it back. You can trace government manipulation of the overt manipulation of the economy at least back to 1987 when the Reagan administration installed the plunge protection team to protect markets from falling excessively. That's market manipulation required by law. It's not a conspiracy theory. It's been going on since 1987, without a doubt. Now, these are fundamental, and I don't know, there may be a dozen other fundamental lies that I could point to if I thought about it, but these are three. We've got a fiat currency. We have a debt-based monetary system. We have central planning in Washington, and they are trying to tell us we have a free market. Bunch of crapola. They're trying to tell us that we can treat debt as assets and wealth. It's just crazy. And these are the problems, in my opinion, that are pushing this economy and our markets closer and closer to some sort of a dramatic decline. It's these fundamental lies. Our economic financial systems are based on major lies that are inherent in fiat currency, debt-based monetary system, and central planning. These lies can't be indefinitely concealed or sustained. A moment of truth, not a moment of deflation, inflation, liquidity, or illiquidity, a moment of truth is coming. This moment of truth will destroy some or all of the major lies on which our economy and monetary system are based. Because this moment of truth is not about simple economics. It's not simply about economic theories and strategies and numbers and mathematics. It's not about political lies that have so far prevented us from getting to that moment of truth. But in the end, the truth isn't subject to economic theories. It's not subject to political double talk. It can be denied. It can be suppressed. It can be concealed and hidden, and we can forget what the truth is for a seemingly long time. But sooner or later, the truth has to emerge and be seen. And when that happens, many of the lies, I won't argue they're all going to disappear, but many of those lies will be destroyed. And the people are going to scream. Say, oh my God, somebody stole my lies. The lies I have depended on and relied on. I thought we could trust a fiat currency. I thought we could trust a debt-based monetary system. I thought we could trust the government to control and plan, the central planners. We could trust them to manipulate the economy in a way that was good for everybody. When all that's shown is lies, when we get that, there's going to be a moment where people are going to say, holy cow. And when we have that, again, that moment of truth, it's going to be followed by some sort of a drastic decline, some sort of a drastic reset for our markets, our economy, our system of monetary, our system of money. And we're going to have to find something true to base this economy on. When we do, we'll get back to business. There will be a painful transition. But then when we get back to business, oh, these are the true rules. This is how the game is really played. People start to play the game properly, effectively, efficiently, and we may get back to, we may see rising prosperity. But first, we are going to see a very difficult period where everyone is at least inconvenienced, and some people are ruined. So, from my perspective, moment of truth is coming. Lies, some of them at least, are going to be destroyed. And so much of the economy and the political system is based on lies that a lot of it's going to crash to the ground. What do you think, Melody?
And those people that will be doing the screaming because they believed in the lies are also the same ones where consumer confidence is still fairly strong.
Yep.
And it is, it really is amazing. We had the U.S. consumer confidence rebound in August to the strongest reading in 7 months after it fell in July.
You know, it's almost by definition, when we talk about consumer confidence, we can ask, confidence in what? And ultimately, you know, people say, well, confidence in the economy. Well, yeah. But it's really confidence in the premises on which the economy and the monetary system are built. And if those premises are false, what we're talking about, we have confidence that the lies can be sustained. At bottom, that's what the confidence is all about. We can sustain these lies. We're big. We're powerful. We can overcome the truth. We can ignore the truth. We're Americans. And what I'm trying to communicate, no, we can't. Oh, we can get away with it for a while. We've gotten away with it for a couple of decades. The idea that pieces of paper can be treated as money. Right? Nothing more. Just pieces, unredeemable pieces of paper. Good enough. That's money. No, it's really not. And insofar as we've embraced that lie and come to rely on it, well, look, I've got a stack of dollar bills here. I'm rich. You've got a stack of paper that in its is intrinsically not superior to a similar stack of Confederate money. In fact, the Confederate money might ultimately have more value dollar per dollar than the U.S. dollar because the Confederate money is a collectible. Huh? We are just caught on these lies. We have confidence in the lies, but if we lose the confidence, and it could happen precisely because we are ultimately confident in a bunch of lies. You know, if we were confident in the truth, if we were confident in the force of gravity or the number pi, all right, how do you calculate the number pi? 3.14, and I don't remember the rest of it. If we are, to the extent we are confident in the truth, that's a confidence that can be sustained. Hard to shake that confidence in the truth. But if our confidence is ultimately based on lies, those lies are fragile. And if they are exposed, our confidence disappears. And what is there left to hold this system together? You know, they tell us all the time, it's confidence, confidence, confidence. They need to maintain public confidence, confidence. Confidence in what? Ultimately, right now, it's confidence in lives. How long can that last?
Which that biggest confidence is the stock market.
Yeah, I know.
I mean, that is the biggest lie around.
I know. And what's the essence of the lie, at least one of them that's involved in the stock market, is that the stock market, the Dow Jones, for example, is a reliable barometer of how well the economy is functioning.
Well...
But what it's really a barometer of, and what it's really been a barometer of for the past couple of decades, is how much power the government has and or the Federal Reserve to manipulate the markets. We're not getting an accurate barometer out of the Dow Jones. That's not telling us what's happening to the economy. It's only telling us what the government wants us to see after they have manipulated the economy. It's not telling us the truth. I mean, the market is not, it's an accurate indication of what the Federal Reserve wants us to believe, but it's not an accurate indication of market fundamentals. And the reason is because government, plunge protection team, Federal Reserve, they manipulate that market. The manipulation makes it a lie. Right? It's an illusion. And sooner or later, we're going to hit that moment of truth. And when we do, and I don't know when, we could hit it this fall, we might not hit it for another year or two. I don't know what's going to happen. But it's going to happen, and it won't be stopped, because it's not simply a matter of economics. It's not just a matter of politics. It won't be stopped because it's a matter of truth. This is a moral phenomenon, not just economic, not just political. Moral, moral. Economics doesn't have a way of defeating that moral truth. Politics don't have a way of defeating that moral truth. They can suppress it. Yeah, yeah, yeah. They can deny it. We can forget it for several years, several decades. But it's going to come back, and it's going to. We are all going to be forced to learn those truths, and we are not going to get. We're not going to return to some semblance of prosperity until we relearn those fundamental truths. Like, if you want to have money and wealth and prosperity, one of the things you have to have is a monetary system that's based on assets rather than debt. At bottom, a debt-based monetary is slick. It's in its own way kind of brilliant, but it's crazy. You know, it's like the man in the rubber room whose name is God. He may have a great argument to convince people that he's God, but no, he's not. You're not. And it's the debt-based monetary system. It's another one of these arguments that can't stand. And that being so, it has to fall. And when it does, there's going to be great, great damage. Many of us are going to be injured. And what do? The best you can do, in my opinion, you're not going to get the Federal Reserve and the government to admit that the debt-based system is wrong. They're not going to admit that. They'll go down. They will fight for it to almost virtually their last breath. So if you agree that a debt-based monetary system is crazy, what do? Get out of debt. Get away from it. And get into assets, assets, assets. Get your own asset-based monetary system. That's gold and silver coins. All right? There are other varieties. There's other things you can do maybe. But get away from debt and start looking. I need an asset. I need an asset. Give me some assets. With assets, I could survive. I might survive the coming debacle. We're out of time for today and for this week. We'll be back on Monday. I want to thank all of you for listening. I'm Alfred Attisk here with Melody Cedarstrom, and hope you have a good weekend. In the meantime, the good Lord bless you, me, Melody, and Frank, the producer. Bye-bye.
Seems to be a single penny left for me.
That's too bad.